What has been one of your favorite Christmas stories of all time?
Well, one of the my favorite, of course, of all time is dear old Charles John Huffham Dickens. And he and I almost shared a birthday. He was February the 7th, mine was February the 9th. You know, he was 1812 to 1870, and of course it's his Christmas Carol, which is my all-time favorite. And I think what he's done in there so well is to talk about things like elementals, superhuman spirits of Christmas past, present, and future, that these were the spirits of occasions, the spirits of society and of social activity, rather than simple entities. And yet he made each one of them different. Each one was truly an entity. And then to compare and contrast those great spirits, those superhuman spirits, he brought in the ghost of poor old Jacob Marley, who was what I would call a Dickensian or Shakespearean type ghost. He was a ghost with a purpose. He came, despite his own misery, to save Scrooge.
I loved him with the chains.
Scrooge. Oh, I did, yeah.
Scrooge.
Yeah, he said, hey, Scrooge, yours is longer than mine.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like the ghost of Hamlet's father in the Shakespeare play, he came with a purpose. And I thought that was so marvelous. And then it takes us right back to the first Christmas. And that seemed to me, for guys like you and me and our listeners who enjoy the mysterious, it seemed to have so much mystery in it. There's the spirituality of the angel choir. It's something all-inclusive. So you have these spiritual beings, and this is contrasted with the humanity of the shepherds. And then we see those shepherds as guardians, which is a wonderful human quality, the guardians of the sheep on those wild, desolate hills where there were wolves and heaven knows what other dangers for the lambs if they hadn't got brave guardians. And then we hit the idea of wisdom. That's symbolized by the Magi, the three kings. And then we find faith, their faith in the guiding star and their questing spirit, their search for a great objective. And then, for me, one of the most wonderful pieces of Christmas is the innkeeper and his wife in Bethlehem. And they see this poor pregnant girl arriving exhausted, and they haven't got any rooms, and he can't turn her away. So he says, okay, well, there's the stable. And I can imagine the innkeeper saying to his wife, well, you serve the customers for 10 minutes. I'm going to see if I can clean that stable. I'm going to see if I can make it habitable.
Yeah, put some new straw down or something.
Put some clean straw down, yeah. And make sure any animals in there are tied up, so that there's room for this young couple. And then there's the courage and the determination of Mary and Joseph and their love for each other and for the baby that was born to them in that stable. And so Christmas for me makes me think of all those qualities, the love, the spirituality, the humanity, guardianship, protection of others, wisdom, questing, sense of purpose, searching for what's good and worthwhile. And then there's generosity and concern, courage, determination to see things through. And I think those are the way that that first Christmas came together. I think it's a way for God to tell us that he wants us to have all those qualities, the spirituality, the wisdom, the concern for others. You know, everything we just thought through there. And one of the strangest, if we look in just briefly for a mystery, I came across a story from Texas in which the witness woke up on Christmas night and saw, to her amazement, what looked like a traditional Santa Claus with the red robes and the big white beard. But beyond him, her bedroom door was open, and the Christmas tree still had the lights on in the adjoining room. And as she looked at the Santa Claus figure, she suddenly realized she could see through him. He was translucent. and the lights on the tree were visible through the shape of Santa Claus. And she watched, and you can imagine, just peeping over the top of the bed linen and watching him. And he took the Christmas stockings that had been put near the fireplace in the old traditional way, and he laid them instead on the coffee table. When she woke in the morning, they were not where they'd been left. They were on the coffee table. She had no explanation for it, but that is one of the most amazing Christmas ghost stories I have ever come across, and it's vouched for as true. A transparent Father Christmas who moved the stockings from where the family had hung them.
You know, this is the... Go ahead. No, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
No. I just think it's a wonderful story. And the other little thing I'd like to add, if we've got a minute left,
yes. Is
my experience when I was making the Christmas special for one of my TV shows a few years ago, and the producer-director sent us over to Myra in Turkey, where there was the tomb of the real St. Nicholas. His holy remains had been moved, but the tomb was still there. And we had a little bit of a contretemps between the tourist authorities, who very much wanted us to go and make the film, and some of the other authorities who were not too enthusiastic about Christian legends and Christian traditions. So the lady from the tourist authority who was looking after us said, "Do you have a roadie with you, assistant?" "Yeah," I said, "yeah, sure." She said, "Well, let's go to the bank and get some $1 American bills, because they are very popular here in Turkey." I said, "Yeah, fine." So we got several dollar bills, and she said, "If you get your roadie to talk to the security guys and give them some small presents, one at a time, slowly, we can whip into St. Nicholas's tomb and film him." So we said, fine. And so while our roadie was busy keeping the authorities, who were not enthusiastic about having Nicholas filmed, off our backs, we whisked into the tomb, and there he was, painted on the wall from the 3rd or 4th century. And he was wearing a long gray beard and a long red robe. So that Father Christmas costume goes back centuries to the way that St. Nicholas was depicted on that tomb wall.